You want kicking things out of orbit?
Oh my gosh!
I'm gonna just knock it over.
One of the greatest fighters.
John Jones beat every champion. Pretty much that. Choose two
more. Khabib gets his hands on McGregor, it's gonna be that night.
Let's get into it. And Matt, we are back with This Week in MMA, and we want to thank everybody for joining us this week. I mean, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at CraigAllenFMP, at MattAllenFMP. You can find the channel Fight Night Picks over there as well, at Fight Night Picks. But Matt, This Week in MMA, we're premiering it here on YouTube. You can find the show also on iTunes and Spotify. But this is a show that we used to do all the time, weekly. Yeah. It was This Week in MMA, and it was one of those shows where, you know, we started back a couple of years ago, established in 2018, wherever it is on my shirt, the fact that Fight Night Picks really began with a podcast. And it was a podcast where I droned into a computer for hours on end and nobody listened. And they probably won't anymore if that's all I did. But that's not the point of this show. We're really looking forward to a special episode, something that we've never done before, where we're going to be pairing MMA media members, fighters, different interviews. And this week, and if you already haven't found out, it's in the title, but we have two really great interviews on tap. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about our guest for this week?
Yeah, so we were fortunate enough to interview one of the better prospects coming up in the bantamweight division. Of course, Adrian Yanez, a guy who is absolutely on fire right now. And someone who is one of those really exciting guys. And they have that it factor outside of the cage. And they do seem like Adrian Yanez could be one of those guys we hear a lot about for years to come, really. Could be in the top 15 for a long time. He talked about kind of the future of the bantamweight division. Just a really great interview with him. And then, of course, got to talk to the country superstar himself, Tebe, about MMA. Really cool interview for both of us because, of course, he's used to talking about music a lot. We talk about MMA, so it's really cool to kind of, you know, get to know a little bit about his world, same thing vice versa. So, yeah, we brought the show back for a reason. Brand new and improved. It's going
to
be great.
So, I mean, Matt, really looking forward to this episode of This Week in MMA. And again, it's going to be a lot different from the show that you were used to before. We're going to be bringing more and more of those interview style questionnaires at you. But again, Adrian Yanez, couldn't have asked for a better guest. And Tebe, Canadian music legend and big MMA fan on the scene down in Nashville. I'm really looking forward to it. So without further ado, Matt, as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it.
It's time for the Twitter Purge.
All right, Matt, and this was a staple of This Week in MMA. It's called the Twitter Purge, and it doesn't always have to be with Twitter. We might stretch it a little bit over to just social media in general. But as you can see, we're going to focus on some of the bigger news stories from this week. We won't tread down on some of the bigger stories because, after all, Fight Night Picks, we do have a whole podcast dedicated to that with myself and John Franklin, Early Stoppage, with episodes dropping later on in the week. But we're going to pick out some of those topics that might fall under the radar. You might not hear as much about them during the week. And Matt, Bellator guy, we're here for the prelims. We're here for those debuting fighters and fighters with negative records. And Matt, this is going to sound really weird and totally out of left field, but Gyoti Yamauchi is one of those guys that we make sure we're there.
Oh, yeah.
For every Yamauchi fight. I mean, the guy's dynamic on the feet and his submission game is slippery. And he missed weight big time today. I mean, I was really looking forward to the fight at Bellator 245 against Nick Anderson. And all of a sudden, that one falls through. And his opponent had fought a pretty high level of competition. Like, this was going to be a really big fight. He's not going to be allowed to fight at 155 anymore. That by Guillermo Cruz of MMA Fighting. The quote itself is from Mike Mazzulli, the head of the Mohican Athletic Commission. I got to say, Mike Mazzulli is a bit of a sketch bag, and that's putting it mildly. I mean, this is a guy that called out Brandon Gertz, and I get it. Mazzulli and the commission are totally separate from Bellator, the promotion. But Brandon Gertz is a promotional guy. He's been with Bellator for a really long time. And what Mike Mazzulli had to say to Brandon Gertz on the scales just a couple of weeks ago was incredibly unprofessional. Almost as unprofessional as me calling out Mike Mazzulli. But somebody has to. For Mazzulli to say this about Yamauchi, I wasn't incredibly surprised. But I was surprised that Yamauchi missed weight by so much.
That's what I mean. And listen, I'm not going to be the Mike Mazzulli defender, but I'm going to sound like it for a second. If you miss weight by 8 pounds, you're not allowed to fight at that weight class anymore. I would make the same exact decision. If you miss weight by that much, that means you're putting your body through such a toll to try to get down to 155, or you just didn't try in the first place. So I don't think you should be rewarded with another fight at 155 if that is the case. We've seen the UFC do this before. Drew Dober was kind of in this situation where he missed weight a couple times. move up in weight, have a couple fights there, and then once you can prove that you can make the weight, then I would allow them to then be reintroduced to that weight class. Unfortunate, though, because Yamauchi, like you had mentioned, he is one of those... He's not really a Bellator star, but he stands out more than just your average Bellator fighter. He is one of the more exciting guys they have over on their roster. And his grappling, it's just really unique, the way that he can throw out different submissions from his guard. He's like a karate and jiu-jitsu specialist, something that you don't really see all that often. So really, it's more of a shame that one of the better fighters over in Bellator is having these kind of issues.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate for sure. And the tricky thing when you're a fighter with Bellator is a lot of the time, the Mohegan Athletic Commission really looks after all of the Bellator events. If they ever go to Ireland, you'll see the Mohegan label kind of slapped on there. Mike Mazzulli looks after those events. He was famous for wanting to get Conor McGregor suspended in every organization possible when he jumped in to congratulate his teammate Charlie Ward, but also confront Mark Goddard. So it's a weird dynamic that they have there. With the Drew Dober case, it's also kind of strange because at that time it was California State Athletic Commission. But if you wanted to fight in Nevada, if you wanted to fight in Arizona, anywhere else, you wouldn't really have to worry about it. So with this case, it's probably going to really affect Yoti Yamauchi's next fight. It'll be interesting to see where we move forward from this one, but I think that's a really interesting story. All right, Matt, from Danny Segura of MMA Junkie, the next tweet coming up is from Artem Lobov. And listen, I mean, his fight was canceled. I was really looking forward to the comeback to MMA from Artem Lobov. That event canceled due to COVID. And it's a weird one because with Artem Lobov, people get to know him through the UFC. He main evented against Cub Swanson. He co-main evented in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. And Matt, Artem Lobov hated every single question I asked him during that fight week. And I'm not joking.
So you're taking on Michael Johnson rather than Tukhugov. Do you typically train for a fight with a specific game plan in mind, or do you train for a certain opponent?
Honest to God, I always have the same game plan. I want to put as much pressure as I can, and I want to land as hard shots as I can. And that will be no difference. I will not take a step back. I will be marching forward, swinging hooks, and then let's see what happens.
But I mean, we did get the good soundbite of him with the choo-choo. But other than that, I mean, I thought asking Artem Lobov, do you switch up your camp? I mean, that's a question that fighters like to answer. Some fighters don't watch any fight tape at all. Some fighters do the same camp every time. I like to know that kind of stuff. It's just for my own personal interest, but I mean, it's fun to talk about. Artem Lobov didn't like it. So, all that aside, Artem Lobov is one of those guys that reached low highs in the UFC. Like, he did well in The Ultimate Fighter, not against Ryan Hall. I mean, he did well in the UFC enough for himself to market the way that he did. It was kind of riding a little bit off the coattails of Conor McGregor. But to me, it is unfortunate that we didn't get to see his return to a cage this week, per se.
So Artem Lobov reached, like, meme lord status. That's really what it was. And people made fun of him because 29 men have tried and 15 have succeeded. So it's not like when you're going to see an Artem Lobov fight, you're going to see the highest level of mixed martial arts.
But Michael Johnson fight?
What he does bring, though, is excitement and entertainment value to the sport. There's a reason him and Jason Knight is still by far the best-selling bare-knuckle boxing. It's because Artem Lobov, not to say he is like Mike Perry, but he has a similar aspect where it is a lot of the showmanship. It's a lot of the stuff outside of the cage. And it is his personality that people do like. Because I think Artem Lobov, he's reached like Mike Tyson levels of self-awareness where he gets it. He's not fighting in main events and high-profile spots because of his skill. He knows what he is. He knows how to make the biggest paycheck off of his name. And honestly, you really can't hate on a guy for doing that. So it is unfortunate that his next fight is canceled, but I probably wasn't going to watch it anyways, if we're being honest. I really don't go out of my way to watch the Artem Lobov fights. It was nice to see him in the UFC when he was there. But again, he's not who you watched when you were trying to see martial arts at his highest expression. It is unfortunate, though. Just weird case all around with MMA fights getting canceled lately.
I mean, I have his squiggle on a poster right next to me, and I did get to see his last MMA fight. So I can hold that over a large percentage of the population, but overall, Artem Lobov, pretty unfortunate there. All right, Matt, and our next headline from MMA Fighting, the fact that veteran lightweight Matt Wyman was released from the UFC. And Matt, there were a lot of names that came out this week. I know Dana White had said there was probably going to be about 60 cuts before the end of the year. Rachel Ostovich won, Saperbeg Safarov, another fighter, among others, and I'm sure we're going to get even more names before the end of the year, which is unfortunate, especially around the holidays for a lot of these fighters. You might not be getting that steady income, but the fact that, hey, you're cut and you have to look for a job, it is unfortunate. for Matt Wyman, we talked about it in the preview before the Jordan Leavitt fight, the fact that this was a guy that 7 or 8 years ago was at the top of the heap. I remember he fought TJ Grant on the prelims, UFC, it was on Fox 6. I'm quite sure that was the card. But again, yeah, it was 7 or 8 years ago. Matt Wyman took that extended time off, didn't really talk about it, and then he came back. And not to say that he looked like a shell of the old Matt Wyman, but he just looked like a fighter that kind of just went in the I don't know.
He's like if a basketball player from the 90s got put in a time machine and brought to today. It's just the style that he did use in his prime. You have to think, MMA is only, what, 28 years old when you really think about it? So you've only had that much time since the start of the sport until now. Things are moving at such a fast rate. Think about a sport like basketball. It's been around for almost 100 years. And you have people never realized that 3 points count more than two until 10 years ago. So with MMA, it is similar. Things keep on getting introduced and reintroduced, and there's always these little different aspects of everyone's game, and it very much is a copycat league. So when one person starts doing something, everyone else joins. Well, for Matt Wyman, he had a 4-year gap where he wasn't learning, and he wasn't advancing at the rate like a lot of other UFC fighters are. And nothing against him. It's not like everyone has the access to, you know, like Georges St. Pierre training camps, to where when they're not competing, they can still have the resources to travel all over the world and train with the best people going. It is unfortunate that Matt Wyman is getting cut, but let's be honest. Once he lost, you kind of realized that was probably going to be the end for him. It does suck to say, but after taking such a long time off, we haven't seen the best Matt Wyman since his return. And I know he has been matched up against killers, and that's not his fault by any means, but it's just been an unfortunate run for him in his return.
I almost want to disagree with you just slightly about the fact that we're talking about killers, because it was Luis Pena, Joe Selecki, and Jordan Leavitt. And not to say that they're not good, but they're just greener prospects than what you would have imagined a performance from Matt Wyman would have looked like.
He's talking 38. About
Jordan Leavitt was 7-0 coming into the UFC. I mean, sure, he had a good win on Contender Series, and he had good wins coming up on the regional scene, but really coming into the UFC, it was a big question mark. Mind you, he was a big favorite in that fight. And for Matt Wyman, again, hopefully he can find his footing outside of fighting. Maybe another organization takes a flyer. Sometimes you see that, especially with fighters that were cut from the UFC. I remember George Sullivan, after he got cut from the UFC, headlined like a King of the Cage card, and then he retired. So maybe that's something in the future for Matt Wyman. But wish nothing but the best for the guy,
yeah.
Especially after a scary knockout that we saw in his last fight against Jordan Leavitt. And on that note, kudos to Jordan Leavitt. I mean, that was a hell of a knockout.
It really was. Like, you're not going to find a better slam knockout no matter where you look.
Now, Matt, 11 KSW events ago was really when Fight Night Picks, we got our big pop. We did a fight companion for KSW 46, and it went absolutely insane. And I mean, before that, we talked to who? Mateusz Gamrot. We talked to Phil DeFries with Fight Night Picks, and we were doing a lot more interviews, kind of like what we're doing right now. And KSW 57 is coming up this weekend, and it is a huge card, next weekend, December 19th. It's a huge card. There's three title fights, and KSW's been really putting together some great events during the pandemic, and I don't know if the North American audience has been paying as much attention as, you know, a lot of those international fight fans have, but I mean, recently with some of the signings that the UFC's made, and especially the signing of Dricus du Plessis, this is definitely an organization you have to watch. If you like the old Pride events, if you like what Ryzen's doing, KSW is the organization for you. And oh, by the way, they have an English commentary team. The ring announcer does a lot of English stuff. They really try to push to a broader audience than just Poland. All that to say, this is probably my second organization that I just have to watch. I mean, you watch the UFC cards, you watch the Bellator cards, you have to watch the KSW. So with this card, it's so special. I mean, you have Phil DeFries looking to defend his belt against Michael Kita. You have Ziolkowski taking on Szymanski. These guys are absolutely on fire right now. Anton Rakic is one of those prospects that you have to watch. He's taking on this uber prospect, this kid that's built like Sage Northcutt out of Brazil. I got to make sure that I get the name right. It is Bruno Santos. Matt, I went back and watched some of his fights. And yeah, I get it. The kid shredded. And it is a little bit of that Sage Northcutt, like I said. But that makes for such a good fight. I think it's going to be more of a coming out party for Rakic than anything. But hey, if Santos gets a win in that fight, holy smokes. What's your take on this card? Because there are some absolute firefights on this
one. 100%. And I like what you had said too about KSW. Hey guys, if you're not watching it, change that, because KSW is basically Pride FC, but in Europe. If you're looking for like a European UFC, Cage Warriors is your spot to go. If you're looking for fireworks, a bunch of freak show fights, but also really high level MMA, KSW is the spot that you have to be at. And yes, every now and then you look at those ridiculous like Marcin Lewandowski or the strongman fights, or you'll get a Popek Monster fight. But on cards like this, you're getting actual high-level MMA. And Phil DeFreeze, I know his UFC run didn't really go as planned, but ever since he's gone over to KSW, he looks like an absolute world beater.
I don't think you're going to ever see Lewandowski, the guy that runs the company, in the fights, but hey, you never know.
Pudzianowski.
Marius Pudzianowski, if you ever do see him. But again, I said there's a lot of good fights. I'm looking at this card. I mean, there's one fight in particular, and I have to focus on it. Boris Mankowski taking on Artur Savinsky. That's a really good fight. And again, you got to watch these cards. Three title fights. They definitely mean something. Phil DeFreeze, since he's left the UFC and competed with Bellator and KSW and a couple of different organizations, this guy's on fire, and his game has taken such a step up. I know there was an article with MMA Fighting, the fact that he kind of conquered his demons that he had in his younger years, because he'd show up and he'd just have anxiety issues going out to perform. He talked about it with me. The fact that when he went to fight Stipe, it was a tougher uphill climb to get into the cage than it was to even fight Stipe. So for Phil DeFreeze, A, kudos to him. He's taken on an opponent in Keita that you'd think, you look at the guy's record and he's 40 years old, he's 20-11, and you'd say, man, those wins, like, what are they? But Andrazic's a huge win, and some of the losses too. You lose to Carol Badorf. There's no shame in that. So overall, next weekend, December 19th, if you got something going on, maybe you're watching the UFC at night with UFC Vegas 17, maybe before that, you check out KSW 57. It's definitely going to be a great event for sure. And Matt, we really like to focus on prospects with the Twitter Purge. And one of the bigger prospect signings this week is the fact that Bellator signed Kana Watanabe to a multi-fight contract. And Bellator, low-key, making these huge signings that a lot of people, it's just flying under the radar. I mean, I know for me, Raufian Stotts was a guy coming out of LFA that was like, well, it's only a matter of time when the UFC signs and Bellator gets him. Kili Smoda, it's only a matter of time before he's on Contender Series, Bellator gets him. Kana Watanabe, 9-0-1, and you look at her last win over Alara Jawani. Man, I remember Alara Jawani made her Bellator debut, and she had the whole Arya Stark nickname, and she had the kill list, and it was pretty cool. And then they did that whole Bellator Rising combined event, and Watanabe fights Jawani, and I thought, all right, Alara Jawani's going to mop the floor with her. Nope! Watanabe put on a great performance, so I mean, signing Usman Nurmagomedov, signing some of these prospects, what do you make of what Bellator is doing right now?
I really like it. This really reminds me of that period in time where Bellator had signed Benson Henderson, Ryan Bader, Rory McDonald. They seem to sort of sign their big name players, if you will, in waves. And I like what they're doing, because with all the talk right now on Twitter and kind of throughout MMA just being, oh, all these layoffs are going to come from the UFC, it is nice that there are organizations out there that are still willing to take in top talent. And for Bellator to really be making these moves, I do think it shows two other MMA fighters who are either near the end of their contracts or maybe they're afraid that they are going to get cut. There are still places for fighters to go after their UFC career is over. And for Bellator to be doing this right now during the pandemic, it is interesting because it could go one of two ways. They either get all this really good talent, their views go up, and Bellator, not to say they'll ever become a threat to the UFC, because it is really hard to gauge that just because they don't really have at least the global appeal of the UFC, but at least domestically in the States, they can put on really good fights right now. And I know we talk about this sometimes, just about like the top people over at Bellator. If Bellator keeps on doing what they're doing now, yes, when you look down towards, you know, maybe their top 10 to 20 guys aren't as good, but if you look at the top 10 of every division of Bellator, there's a lot of people over there who could rival anyone in the UFC. So again, if you're not watching Bellator, if you're not watching KSW and some of these other organizations, I think people will be surprised when some of these other fighters do come to the UFC and you see the amount of success that they're going to have.
And I mean, I got to shout out my MMA News. They put out an article today kind of outlining the blueprint of what Bellator has done so far and really kind of just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes, because what they did to start off was just pay that top dollar to get all those big, you know, legends in. You get the Fedors, you get
Rampage,
you get Ryan Bader, you get Chael, all those old UFC guys, Lorenz Larkin, Chael. And then slowly but surely, they build themselves up with prospects to the point where they're rivaling the UFC with some of the fighters that they're starting to sign, and they're putting on these big cards like the one that they have coming up this week. And I mean, again, maybe the midweek fight cards, maybe that doesn't work out for you. You're going to miss out on some of those names. And it might be the same thing with PFL, but I really do think Bellator is doing that. Styles make fights. They can still do that and put on really good fights. And they can sign some of these higher-end prospects that might not be interested in a UFC because they might not be able to travel, make those UFC requirements. Yeah. And the other thing, too, maybe the PFL's not all that, maybe it doesn't appeal to a lot of people because they missed a whole year, and I get it. I understand what you're doing. But the season format as well, I mean, if you get conked out in July, you got nothing to do for the rest of the year, and there's a chance that the PFL doesn't let you fight for another organization. So for Bellator, I really do like what they're doing. It'd be nicer if they had their fighters fighting more often. But overall, as an organization, if we're rating the different organizations that are signing big-name talent, you have UFC, who's in a good spot right now, okay, but they are needing to cut some of those higher paid fighters to accommodate the fighters that they have signed, and they've signed fighters in droves. You have one championship that the last time I checked, not really in the best spot right now. Not today, anyway. But with Bellator, they're kind of doing it right, which is weird to say.
I would agree. Now, a lot of people are all doom and gloom about the UFC and their cuts, but we also have to remember, it's not like the UFC is just bringing on Contender Series prospects. Like, Mateus Gamrot just recently got signed. I would consider him a top-level signee, if you will. So I do think the UFC is still taking in top-tier talent from outside of their own organization, but it is a little unfortunate when you do see some of these, and not to throw shade because everyone has to start somewhere, but when you do see sort of these 7-0 or 6-0 fighters making their way into the UFC, and you have guys like Yoel Romero no longer able to compete, that's a little unfortunate, but I do still think the UFC is bringing in big-name talent. I just like what Bellator is doing right now because, again, it's a weird gray area, just really in the world, I guess, but especially for the UFC. They've got Fight Island, they've got the Apex facility, and then we don't really know when they're going to be able to start doing shows, you know, internationally again. So I like what Bellator is doing. Hopefully they can keep on building up a competitive roster, and then when we do get back to, I guess we'll call them post-pandemic times, maybe then we can actually see the full Bellator roster be a lot more consistent. And they could, again, to say that they'll rival the UFC is a bit of a tough call. But if Bellator can at least get to the point where one day they can be seen as a legitimate, not threat because it's hard to say, but they can be seen as a legitimate second fiddle to the UFC, I do think they're going to get a lot more free agents that way.
All right, Matt, we'll flip it on back. And Matt, you know what? As we always say with Fight Name Picks, let's get into it. And the people love to comment that, so do so below. Let's get into it. But hey, we've got two really good interviews this week on tap. Like I said, Adrian Yanez, the UFC bantamweight, picked up a performance of the night bonus in his UFC debut. And Tebe, Canadian music legend and huge MMA fan. So Matt, let's kick it on over to Mr. Adrian Yanez, representing Houston, Texas, on the world's biggest stage, coming out of Metro Boomin, Metro Fight Club. It's time to hear from Adrian Yanez. So really excited to bring on our first fighter to the relaunch of This Week in MMA. He's had a busy 2020, punched his ticket to the UFC in a 39-second beatdown of poor Brady Huang on Dana White's Contender Series Week 2 and kept the momentum going with yet another first-round finish in his UFC debut on Halloween, proudly representing Texas on the biggest stage. And by the way, just announced yesterday that he's got a really big fight coming up in March against the former Combate bantamweight champion Gustavo Lopez. So let's get into it with the man himself, Adrian Yanez. Adrian, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Man, thank you for having me on, man. This is pretty cool, man. I love it, man.
I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, so far, you're 2-0 at the UFC's Apex facility. Now, were they two different sets, were they not?
Yeah, two different sets, and it was pretty cool because the first time I got the locker room, like, I didn't get a locker room. I got that, like, big old space, like, just mats thrown on the ground. This last time I got my whole, like, my own locker room and everything. So I thought that was pretty dope. It was pretty cool. But the environment was different. You know, you got the walkout music. You got the announcement from Bruce Buffer and everything. So it wasn't just like walk out to silence fight. It was, you got the whole thing. So it was pretty cool. It was really, really cool.
So, I mean, with that, do you prefer fighting in front of a bigger crowd like you were with some of the LFAs and different promotions? Or do you enjoy just being out there in a smaller setting like that?
Man, honestly, either one's fine with me. I kind of just realized that I just like to fight. So it doesn't matter if there's a thousand people in a stadium or a stage or whatever, or if there's nobody, man. It's, to me, it doesn't matter. I love it, but I do want after I knocked out Victor, I did want that big crowd like roar, but you know, it was also pretty cool just to hear silence, you know, like there's nobody there and you just knock somebody out and you just you and like 20 other people in the Apex are there just like, oh crap, that actually happened.
And about that performance against Victor Rodriguez, you picked up performance of the night bonus, super impressive fight. How has that really changed your life ever since you did pick up such a big win in your UFC debut?
Man, I was really hoping I picked it up, man, because a week before I fought, I actually, that was my last day at my day job. So I was really hoping for that. Once I got that 50, it just solidified everything for me. I was like, okay, it was good. I did bet on myself and I did pass with flying colors. And then, all right, cool. Financially, I'm set for at least a year, you know, because at the job that I had, I was barely passing up $32,000 a year. And I was like, oh, I just made a year worth of money in one night. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and with your fight against Gustavo Lopez booked for next year, looking back at your record, 2019 was your busiest year, fighting three times from January until, of course, your main event at LFA 78 in November. How many times do you like to fight a year, ideally? A lot of the times going through your record, you do get kind of two in every single year. Is that something that you want to continue into the future, or do you plan on having, like, a Cowboy Cerrone run at some point where you're competing four or five times a year?
I was actually planning on this year, 2020, being my Cowboy Cerrone year, because I wanted to fight. I had a fight booked in March, February, and it got canceled due to COVID and everything. What I planned on was fighting March, fighting again like in May, and depending where I was at, if I got the contenders call or not, like take a short notice fight if I had won those two fights into the UFC, and just keep on going. I actually wanted another fight this year if I could have. I wanted to fight December 19th. But things didn't plan out the way it did. You know, I actually ended up catching COVID at the beginning of November. So it kind of delayed my problem. So if it was up to me, man, I would have fought December 19th without any disruptions or anything. I would have wanted to get back there as soon as possible. So this 2021 for me is going to be really, really busy. I don't want no time. You know, I don't want no time off. I want to keep going. Especially, man, like those years that I only got two in, those years I had actually sustained injuries, but the ones I had three, I like my 2019, I fought January, then I fought in the summer. But the reason why those were spaced apart is because I got injured during that time. And then I was going to fight in August, but my opponent came in like super overweight. So I had to cancel that. And then ended up fighting again in November. So yeah, it was like one of those, I was like really trying to get like four in, honestly, that year. So I honestly want to keep that rolling. I want to keep fighting as many times as I can. If I'm active, I'm healthy, I really want to get back into it.
And I mean, you had mentioned kind of the COVID situation for yourself at the start of November, and really with the way things have gone this year in training, it must have been pretty tough. What's it been like with the different restrictions? I know Texas is a lot different. We're on the East Coast of Canada. It's a totally different world, but what's it been like for you with training and the change-ups in camp?
And the change-ups in camp, especially since the beginning of the year, was very wonky. Like we had a gym all the way up until March. Like we had a solid like location. We had to shut down the gym, and we were like literally training inside of a warehouse where the guy prints t-shirts. He had a small amount of space that we were able to use, and we were training at a t-shirt company. So we were just trying to make do with the best way we could until like June, July hit. Then we got into the this place called O Athletics, and it's like a fighter's paradise. So it all actually worked out for the best, you know. Even though we had to like train in a like small little space, warehouse space where they print t-shirts and everything, so it was weird. But also during that time, like we were only really training the fighters. We weren't really training with anybody else. We just stuck with our small, like at the most, we have a 12-person group at most. So it worked out better and in favor for us because we got more one-on-one time. We got like a lot more time to work on technique. You know, we like if we were feeling it that day, we would like stay away. Like we're in close contact. We actually got closer as a team. If that like out of everything, we got closer as a team, and like we actually got like we were in a lot of contact, more contact than I would like to say. it was a good experience. It definitely was. And now that we're in a group and now everything's kind of opening up just a little bit more and more and more. It's only gotten better. We got more guys coming in and it's just been great. But also we've had our little hiccups here and there with COVID. So I know for myself, once I caught it, I stayed away out the gym for like almost my first time actually back was the week of Thanksgiving. So I had to take some time out.
Yeah, and that's definitely an odd situation for you. But I mean, good that you at least get to become tighter knit as a team, especially with the fighters that you train with. And I mean, really looking ahead to your next fight. It was just announced, like I said, yesterday that you're going to be taking on Gustavo Lopez in the new year. What do you know about your next opponent?
I know he's tough. I honestly just seen more of his highlight videos. And I can just tell. I can just tell he's going to be a tough fight. He's a really tough fighter. I saw that he was 5. He's 5'5". I haven't really done like the most accurate studies off like the film study because, like this month of December, it's more like we're getting ourselves in tune to get ready for a training camp, you know. So just really having like stuck so hard and like focused in on him, I've been honing a little bit of things here and there, but also from what I've seen, he's 5'5". And anytime I fought somebody who's shorter than me, I've usually been able to catch my reach and catch like everything in the flow like that. It's not much of a big deal for me to handle with the shorter fighter. The taller fighters, you know, I've always fought taller fighters. I really haven't fought anybody like my general height, which is weird, but.
I mean, you know, looking at that fight, and I mean, when you try and prepare for some of these fights, the one question that I like to ask guys is, do you yourself do a lot of tape study? Do you go out there and search out this guy? Or do you let your coaches just handle it and you just train as you normally do?
Man, it's a little bit weird because now that, like, as in the regional circuit, I just came off the regional circuit. So I was just like I'd never looked at anybody because on the drop of a dime, you could be fighting somebody else. So it was always just focusing on me and just honing my skills and fighting. We never really game planned for anybody. We just usually it was like, all right, well, you know, you're like my losses came from people just trying to wrestle me and put me on my back the whole entire fight. So it was like, I need to work on that. And that's pretty much what we've been working on this whole entire time. You know, now that we got a set opponent, and it's like 3 months down and it's in the UFC where, you know, right now we're still in this COVID time. There's a lot of fights that's been dropping off, but like I get to be more in tune. Like I know this guy's going to show up. Unlike the Aaron Phillips and Victor Rodriguez situation, you know, which to me, once that happened, I was just like, I don't care. Just throw anybody in there. I will focus more on and do more film study. Me and my coach talk all the time and he trusts what I say. You know, he's like, we have that good communication where if I tell him something, he'll oblige, he'll watch the tape and then be like, okay, I saw what you saw. Let's start working on this. So it's a really good communication set. And we have a really good relationship as a coach and a fighter.
I hate to bring up the losses, but the Miles John fight was a really close one. Again, one of the flip of the coin fights. And it is really interesting because you guys both are in the same position right now in the UFC, both the bantamweight division. Is that one that you are kind of looking forward to as in, oh, that's a guy who I need to get it back on? Or are you looking forward to bigger and brighter things in the future?
Man, I say it all the time. It's like, man, they all can and will get it, you know? So I'm not like, if his name's on the contract, His name's on the contract. He's next. I haven't turned down a fight. Whoever my manager shoots me and says, hey, like, we got this guy. I'm like, all right, cool, 100%. We'll go. We're ready for it. You know, like in the contenders, I actually had like about two opponents. I had this other guy from Georgia ended up not wanting to fight me, and he pulled out. And I was like, okay. Then I got Brady, you know, which luckily that one stuck. And then for this one, I had Aaron Phillips. Aaron Phillips, that was the first name offered to me, so I said yes. And then he pulls out, and then the first name that they offered me was Victor. I was like, yeah. So I'm not the type to say no. I'm definitely going to go in there against whoever. But definitely, man, like I said, man, if his name's on the contract, he's up next.
In your interview with Mike Heck too, you had talked about how your performance, you don't grade it as an A- or B+, and those are very good grades, but I'm just kind of curious, to you, what would an A+ performance look like? Is it a fast Conor McGregor kind of against Jose Aldo knockout, or are you looking to outclass your opponents for all 15 minutes?
Man, it's a mixture of both. If I can get like not touched and do the Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo type finish, that's great. That's an A+ performance. But also like from bell to bell, you were just outclassing him. Like the strikes, you got to be making them like if they're throwing 10 strikes, they should only be landing one. You know, that's my, like, I'm very harsh when it comes to grading, especially my own stuff. Like I only really gave myself like a B+ because, like, you know, it was a phenomenal knockout. If I'm really looking at it, I give myself like, because I'm my own harshest critic. So I'm like a B-, if I'm being quite honest with you, because I got really comfortable and a little bit stationary. I started walking forward with my hands down, but that was also a little bit of ego because, like, you know, before, like at the weigh-ins and everything, he was like trying to get in my head. And like, you know, just smiling at me, like doing his hands, like pounding his hands together, like we're in the fifth grade or something, just smiling and laughing the whole entire time. And I'm like, okay, that's why whenever we faced off each other at the weigh-ins, that's whenever I was like I was in his face. But like during the fight, definitely it spilled over. I was like, no, I'm going to show you why I'm beating you. I'm going to walk with my hands down towards you. And I ended up getting caught with a couple shots. So, you know, that's, to me, I'm looking at it as a B-, you know, even though it was a spectacular fight and it was a spectacular finish and everything, I'm harsh on myself, B-.
So, I mean, really, you're in one of the busiest divisions in the sport. It's popping off. You get TJ Dillashaw coming back into the fold in the new year. What's your take on the top tier of the division and the return of the former champion TJ Dillashaw?
I'll speak of the state of the division first, then I'll answer the TJ Dillashaw. the state of the division, man, it's nothing but killer city, man. It's all killers. There's no, like, even in the top 30, you got nothing but killers. You know, I consider myself like one of those killers as well, man. There's like a whole list of people. And like in the top 15, any one of those guys can beat each other on any given day. And that actually like really excites me because it gives me something to work forward and work towards too. It's like, oh man, like, dude, like, look at the Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera like fight, dude. Nobody really knew like Chito Vera like that until after he did that to Sean O'Malley. You know, we all like, if you were a fan of the sport and you watched the fights, you knew Chito Vera is a motherfucker. You know, so just like a lot of these guys, you got like Ricky Simon, that guy's a beast, and you got all these other fighters. You got Marlon Moraes. You know, even though he kind of fades out, you know, he's still, nobody wants that first round Marlon Moraes. Man, like, dude, just look at the top two guys. You got Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan. Those guys are freaking beast. I personally think that Aljamain might have this one, a five-round decision. But, man, it's a really stacked division. And it really excites me because, man, there's a whole bunch of road killers, and I get to go against those guys. And that freaking excites me because I'm just like, like, dude, like, this is what I wanted to do. Like, I'm living my dream. I'm going out there and I get to fight these guys. Like, yeah, like, it's really exciting. The return of TJ Dillashaw, on that hand, I don't know. He shouldn't come back to the top. Like, he's saying he should get a title shot. Man, I don't think so, man. That he should get at least a win or two to get himself back in there. But, man, I don't know, man. The guy was trying, like, I heard snippets of his interview. I didn't really hear, like, too much of his interview. And I'm just saying, I don't know, man. like in his own head, he was trying to like he was saying, well, if you got away with it, he'd be like, yeah, no, I'd try to find a way to justify. I was like, if you're admitting it, like at least you're man enough to admit it, but at the same time, you get no respect from me. You're out there blatantly cheating, going out there trying to get ahead of your opponent, and you're trying to cheat the system. I don't like that. I don't like cheaters. You know, I'm a clean guy. I take Thorne supplements, you know, provided from the UFC and everything. So, coming from a guy who's at the top of the level using EPO, you know, it really kind of just pisses me off, you know, because you got to, if you really want to get there, you work hard for it. If you have to take banned substances, dude, just get the fuck out the sport, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
sorry for cussing, man. That I was like, shit.
No, man, it's definitely understandable. I mean, you hate to see it, especially at the highest level, like you said.
Oh, yeah. And you kind of did half our jump for us by breaking down that Piotr Jan Aljamain Sterling card. So I feel like I have to ask you about this weekend's fight or pay-per-view coming up. Any fights that really standing out to you? And could we get a prediction on that flyweight title fight from you?
Man, dude, I was pulling for Alex Perez's last fight. And then after seeing, you know, what Figgy did, you know, it's kind of hard to bet against Figgy, but I'm going to do it again. I did it once. I'll do it again. I got Brandon Moreno. He's a beast, you know, especially like the fight with him and Brandon Royval. That was a really good fight, even though like the unfortunate ending, you know, but if you're looking from the grappling exchanges, you can kind of see that Brandon Moreno is kind of getting the better part of it. I'm really hoping for Moreno to go out there and, you know, beat him. It's going to be a tough task, but man, that's a hard task to do because Figgy got power in his hands, and then also his jiu-jitsu is like freaking solid, man. He took Joe Benavidez's back like nothing, like butter, man. And slid that choke in. Ugh, it was disgusting. But yeah, honestly, there's been so many fight cards and so many like fight weekends that it kind of like I kind of like forget who's like actually fighting. I know. Those are the 19th, they have for sure. They have Chito Vera versus Aldo. That Chimaev fight was up there. I think they had the Tony Ferguson and Edson Barbosa for the 19th. But the 12th, who else was fighting? Do I have the card on hand? Because I'll let you know which.
Oliveira Ferguson's actually the co-main. So I mean that one's a pretty big one. I mean, you know, style for style, that's one of the best fights you can make straight up.
Oh yeah, so who's co-main for this one, December 12th?
So Tony Ferguson, Oliveira. You got Moicano taking on Fazeev, Holland, Jacare. You got JDS, Cyril Gane, Cub Swanson, Daniel Pineda, Mackenzie Dern, Verna Jandihoba, Billy Quarantillo, Gavin Tucker, Tisha Torres, Sam Hughes. That one must have just been announced as we've been on because it was Torres and Angela Hill, Spivak, Vandera, and then Chase Hooper's taking on Peter Barrett. So it's not a bad card.
That's this Saturday?
That's a Saturday.
Damn. you got a whole bunch of like great fights that are going on. Like I'm over here lollygagging, you know, not thinking about fights, you know. I just watch them. I just pull up and watch them, man. The Pineda and Swanson.
Yeah.
I'm actually really looking forward to that one. Pineda is a hometown guy. You know, whenever I was a teenager, before I even had my first MMA fights, I was watching Pineda fight in Houston. Like I was at the Legacy fights where he was fighting and like going out there and finishing all these guys. And then he gets the shot in Houston. You know, he gets the shot in the UFC. You know, he gets shaky. He falls out, and I saw him do the rebuild process and get back into the UFC. So, man, to me, like that's the fight that I think that's really going to put Pineda back in there. Cub Swanson is no slouch though, so it's a really great fight. And if you know Daniel Pineda, I think like none of his fights has gone the distance. Like in all of his wins, I think all of his wins have been by finishes, I believe. I think it's either that or it's like a 95%. It's like really high up there. So that's the fight that everybody needs to watch.
I mean, you heard it here first. Adrian, thanks so much for your time, man. Everybody should be looking forward to that Cub-Swanson fight against Daniel Pineda, but also your fight coming up against Gustavo Lopez. So good luck with the lead up to the fight in March. For the fans out there, where can they find you on social media? And if you have any training partners, coaches, sponsors to shout out, let everybody know.
Man, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for supporting me, man. Like, the messages and everything that I get after the fights, you know, like, and before and everything, like, they mean a lot. I got to give a big shout out to my coach, Salsa Lee, you know, who owned Metro Fight Club. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be in the position I am today. Also, Iridium Sports Agency, my manager, Jason House, like, they've helped get me here and they've helped take care of me in this position. And then also HK training gear, you know, HK USA, they've provided me with all my training gear for all my training camps. So I've been blessed. You know, thank y'all, everybody, man. Thank y'all for having me on. It's been an honor.
Thanks again, man. We'll have to do it again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%.
Matt, it was great talking to Adrian Yanez. And how crazy was it? I mean, Yanez and I were going back and forth in the DMs. And then a day after we kind of linked up and decided that we'd chat, the next day, he has a fight booked with Gustavo Lopez. It's crazy. And the day after, we're talking about the fight. So it's awesome. And another thing that's been popping up with Fight Night Picks, Matt, people seem to love the ad reads with Manscaped. I don't know what it is. There's been some inappropriate questions there about it. But support for today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Who's the best in below-the-waist grooming? Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Now, Matt, we've all been there before. We bought that cheap trimmer from the big box store. I know I've been there. It comes with a nose hair trimmer. And I'm a nose hair guy. And that's not a good thing to be, but I'm a nose hair guy. Now, they have the weed whacker. You can use it in your ear, you can use it in your nose, but it works great. So, let's have a look. I've got the perfect package here, and I have the perfect package everywhere because of this kit. But the weed whacker works great. You just pop it in your nose, turn it on. I don't know if you can hear that. I got it on. I'm trimming my nose hair live, and you can see it. But either way, the perfect package kit comes with a lot of great stuff. I mean, the Manscaped shirts, no word of a lie. It's a great shirt to wear. Matt's got it right under his Fight Night Pick stuff. It's great. Their boxers, which are somewhere here. Matt's got them on his leg. He's playing around with my boxers. But they're a great addition. But the main thing with Manscaped is the fact that they've redesigned the electric trimmer. The engineering team has perfected the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. And just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. And I can't say enough about it. I mean, I'm a shower guy. It's got the light on there. You can see perfectly. You're not going to nick your nuts. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge blade to reduce grooming accidents. It's a ceramic blade. And when I tell you it's premium, it is premium. The battery's going to last for 90 minutes. And the other great thing about it, it's waterproof, so you can shave in the shower. But one of the coolest features, the LED light. I mean, I've already gone over that. But you're talking about a charging stand, and if I can get it on the charging stand, like so, have that out. You're coming up to the holidays. Now, whether or not you're in an area where you can have people over, or if it's just a Zoom call or a Skype call with your folks, just show them what you have in the bathroom. Sit that Manscaped trimmer on there. People are going to be impressed. So, if you're listening to me speak right now, I want you to experience this firsthand for yourself. Let's get that bush and tush clean. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code FNP at manscaped.com. Make your testies your besties. Matt, no word of a lie, the products are great. If you get the perfect package, it comes with the Lawnmower 3.0. It comes with the leather carrying case. Who doesn't need a good toiletry bag? I mean, under normal circumstances, I travel quite a bit, whether it's covering the fights or whatnot. You get this great kit. You also get the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. It's great stuff. It's like a salve. You just massage it on. Not too long, but just quick. And it makes your day great. And then the Crop Reviver Ball Toner. Spritz a little bit of that on. You're going to have yourself a nice and tidy day. So overall, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FNP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the promo code FNP. Your balls will thank you. Matt, I was so excited to get our next guest on. Canadian songwriter, recording artist, producer, singer, Tebe. And Matt, I know a lot of MMA fans, you might not be familiar with Tebe. Growing up here in Canada, you've definitely heard a Tebe song on the radio if you happen to be a country fan. If not, still check out his stuff. He has some absolute, and I know this is an overused word for music, some absolute bangers. He just had a song that was certified platinum up here in the Great White North, Denim on Denim. And if you're a Fight Night Picks fan, we use that Denim on Denim song right after the fights are over when we recap our picks. If they happen to be pretty good, if not, we own up to it. But still, Tebe is one of those guys that it was great to have him on. I know we're going to have him on in future. He had some pretty interesting predictions for some of the fights coming up this weekend with UFC 256, but we had to ask him about the main event, UFC 257, Matt. So without further ado, let's throw it over to the man himself, Tebe. Really excited to bring in our first guest of the relaunch this week in MMA. He's an international recording artist, singer, songwriter, and producer based out of Nashville by way of the Great White North. You can find his new single, Shotgun Rider, on iTunes and Spotify, and his song, Denim on Denim, which just certified platinum. But the reason why he's here is because he's low-key a big MMA fan. So let's get into it with the one and only Tebe. Tebe, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, there's probably a lot of MMA fans that are kind of saying, hey, how did this guy get into country? And I mean, Tebe, you got into country at a young age, but in terms of MMA, how did you get into following MMA and kind of like at what age did you get into it?
You know, it's kind of funny. I kind of got into MMA through my buddies Emerson Drive, who's a pretty popular country music band from Canada. You know, they're half of the members of the band are from Quebec, so they were obviously huge GSP fans. And I remember them dragging me to the Buffalo Wild Wings down here in Nashville one day to watch a GSP fight. And not only was GSP Canadian, but he was obviously incredible. So I was hooked, you know. And I've been this has got to be 10 years ago. So I've been a pretty big MMA fan ever since.
So, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much the same time that we really got into it. I mean, as fans, it was the Shogun era, the GSP times. And have there been any other Canadian fighters that you've really tried to follow throughout the years?
Yeah, I mean, Felicia Spencer is a great Canadian. You know, she did really well against Amanda Nunes a couple months ago. So I've been following her. And there's a kid who's escaping my name right now, but he's out of Calgary. I think he's like of Nigerian descent.
Hakeem Dawodu.
Yes, Hakeem. Yeah, that guy. He's pretty good. He seems to be climbing up the rankings there in his division. So I've kind of been following him as well.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a big fight coming up against Shane Burgos, looking like that one. I think it's UFC 257.
I believe
the card before.
It's gonna be a phenomenal
big fight coming up in January. Either way, so I mean, we're really looking into a year where, you know, it was a weird year. I know it was a weird year for you. You had a lot of things planned, especially up here in Canada, but MMA has been weird too. And as far as watching the fights, I know it seems like you had a pretty good setup there on Instagram to watch the fights. Do you prefer it without the fans or do you prefer it in a big stadium setting?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you what, the first time I saw the UFC without any fans, I think it was that event that they had. Was it in Florida?
Yep.
I think down there in Tampa. I thought it was really strange. Just because you're so used to having the ambient noise, you know, and just having the... Oh, let me turn this down real quick. You guys can probably hear that. Sorry.
Is that unreleased stuff or what?
You guys are getting the scoop. But no, yeah, the first time I saw the UFC without having any fans was that Tampa event, that Florida event they had a little while ago. And I thought it was really weird. It was just, you're so used to hearing the crowds react when there's a submission attempt or when there's a big shot landed. So not having the crowd to react, I thought was quite strange. But to be honest with you, 5-6 months later, I'm kind of used to it now, not having the crowd. It doesn't really bother me. I like being able to hear the fighters when they're, you know, jawing at each other or chirping each other, and you can kind of hear the corners really clear now. So it doesn't really bother me right now anyways.
And I mean, really just kind of piggybacking off of that, like Tony Ferguson was the main event of that card that was in Florida in the return. Do you worry about Tony Ferguson coming back on this next pay-per-view? Like he did take a lot of damage in that card and he is coming back in a pretty high profile fight. Like, do you think we'll see that same version of him?
I don't know. I was looking at the card today before this and just trying to make my picks and that's a tough one. I mean, Oliveira that's a tough fight for him. We'll see what happens. I'm not really sure. I mean, yeah, he took a lot of damage. It was quite a while ago, so I'm sure he's healed up pretty good. But Tony Ferguson is pretty tough. I think everybody knows that. But it's all about his mental state. You know, where is he at mentally? He seems like he's got his stuff together. So we'll see what happens. But that's going to be a tough one.
So, I mean, if we look ahead at this card, UFC 256 coming up, you had Deiveson Figueiredo just coming off a crazy win in his title defense over Alex Perez. You got Brandon Moreno, who had a crazy fight against Brandon Royval. It was a shame there was an injury in that fight. But, I mean, we've been kind of calling it Brandon Moreno, assassin baby, maybe be the champ by the end of 2020. And then under the circumstances, he gets a shot. What's your take on that fight?
I don't think he gets it done. I really don't. I just think that Figueiredo is just too good, to be honest with you. I mean, look at what he did to Benavidez. You know, not once, but twice. So I think Figueiredo gets it done. I think he knocks him out or submits him in round two.
I mean, that's fair. Like, Deiveson Figueiredo's on a run. It looks like they just might have signed a Figueiredo brother or cousin or something.
Oh, really?
So they're trying to build off him at least. Now, a guy that we've been familiar with up here in Canada with the TKO promotion in Quebec, Ciryl Gane. I mean, this guy's absolutely insane. Trains with Francis Ngannou. But he's got a fight coming up against one of the biggest names in the heavyweight division, Junior Dos Santos. Who are you looking for in that one?
Ooh, man, oh, man. Put me on the spot here. It's hard to count out Junior Dos Santos. I mean, it doesn't matter how old he is. it's really hard to count him out. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure if I can make a pick and say that I think Dos Santos is going to pull that out, but we'll see what happens. What card is that coming up on?
That one's 256, and it's a tough one. It really is. Like, I mean, I'm looking at this card, Moicano Fazeev, you got Kevin Holland taking on Jacare Souza. There's a lot of really big fights on this one, but I guess we're going from this pay-per-view into the one in January, UFC 257. So I do have to ask you for a pick in that fight. You get the rematch, the main event. You got Dustin Poirier taking on Conor McGregor. Who do you like in that one?
Man, my heart tells me that McGregor's going to get it done. But I want Poirier to win. You know, that's kind of where I sit. You know, I'm not a big McGregor fan. I just, you know, every time I start to like him again, because he has a nice moment of humility, like when he, you know, he was talking to Cowboy's grandmother after that fight, and he just seemed like he had a really, he'd grown up a little bit, you know, and then you see kind of some of the things that he's been tweeting and putting out there on socials, and it's the same old Conor. Some people like it. I personally don't. So I think Conor will win that fight. I think it'll be a battle, but I would love to see Poirier take it, just because I like Dustin Poirier. I think he's a great guy.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, so people kind of know I'm one of the bigger Dustin Poirier fans there is out there. Just kind of curious, who are the fighters that you make sure you watch their fights? Like, who are your top five favorite guys to watch compete?
Wow. Miocic, but you know, I dig him. There's certain fighter personalities that I really enjoy. I actually really like Sean O'Malley. I think he's got a very entertaining personality. I like Peter Yan. I love watching his fights. And then, you know, my favorite fighter, honestly, other than Adesanya, has got to be Whitaker. I love watching Robert Whitaker go at it. You know, I mean, he's not only is he a nice guy, but he's just so clinical and he's so talented. So, yeah. And there's no quitting that guy. So I'm a huge Whitaker fan.
And I mean, looking at that middleweight division and talking about Israel Adesanya, like, to me, probably the biggest star in the sport. Did you get a chance to watch what happened last weekend? Did you get a chance to watch Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson?
I did. I was actually quite pleasantly surprised. I thought that, you know, other than Roy Jones Jr. kind of gassing there after the third round, and then just trying to hang on for the rest of the fight. But, I mean, shoot, they both look pretty good. I mean, to be in their 50s and to be out there, I mean, I wouldn't step in the ring. I wouldn't get anywhere near them, you know, and then they're 50-something years old. So I thought it was really impressive. I think next up, hopefully, is Holyfield. And I think that could break a lot of records, you know, for pay-per-views. I just think there's so much nostalgia involved when you've got Tyson fighting anybody, really, but obviously Tyson Holyfield would be incredible. So I think you're gonna see that one next.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool to see. And I mean, I thought Israel Adesanya too on the broadcast, I thought he did an amazing job. Like, it was one of the highlights for me, the whole thing.
Yeah, I loved it. I love Snoop Dogg too. I mean, if there's a petition, I would sign it right away, man. I thought he was hilarious. Like, just doing what he does, man. He was common, doing the commentary just like you would expect Snoop Dogg to do it. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
I mean, the crazy part of it was he does that co-main event with Nate Robinson and Jake Paul. And then he comes out and raps, and then he's back in the booth doing commentary. Like, I think it's pretty crazy that he can do that. And hopefully it opens up some more doors, because you see him, he does a little bit of NHL. He does a little bit of NBA, but for him to be a part of combat sports, it's great to see for sure.
I say let him do a couple fights a year, you know, just to change it up a little bit. I mean, I think obviously the UFC's got some pretty awesome commentary. I love Paul Felder and you've got who else is out there? You got Rogan. I mean, there's so many great, you know, commentary people out there. But to have Snoop step in a couple times a year and sit there with Bisping, I think that'd be incredible.
That wouldn't be too bad. I mean, it's disappointing again. The way things are, Nashville's had 5 UFC cards in total. The last one was Wonderboy Pettis. Have you had a chance to get out to many UFC cards before 2020, I guess?
I was there. I was probably sitting 10th row for Nashville UFC. And with the epic Superman cage jump punch from Pettis to knock out Wonderboy. It was right on our side of the arena as well. We were about 10 rows back. Me and my buddy Mike from the band Emerson Drive, the drummer, we loved it. We're both huge MMA fans, and he comes over to my place all the time because I've got this kind of media room home theater thing, so I get to watch the fights on a big screen every weekend.
Well, that's awesome. And I mean, just to kind of finish up, as far as 2021 is concerned, I know the Canadian tour was supposed to be 2020. What do you have planned as far as the music's concerned? I know new single just dropped a couple of weeks ago, still promoting that. But what do you have planned for the next year?
To hopefully be able to tour again. I think that's the hardest part of this whole pandemic for people like myself is, you know, I make the majority of my money being out there to playing shows for people and not being able to tour has been really tough. We'll see what happens in the new year. I think, the news is saying we're getting closer to a vaccine. I know the UK is going to start administering their vaccines next week, and hopefully Canada will be not too far behind. But I just hope that there's shows because I miss it. I miss playing music for the people live. But until then, yeah, we just released a new single called Shotgun Rider. The video is going to be coming out next week. So I'm staying busy down here, just trying to stay busy. Wait until the border opens up again and I can play some shows.
Looking forward to it, Tebe. Yeah. We really appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can do this again. Maybe we'll do some picks or something, but we really appreciate your time.
I'd love to, man. You know, I was telling my management earlier, it's like, you know, every interview I do, it's about me and my music, and the fact that I get to talk about MMA is awesome. So that's why you saw me say absolutely as soon as you guys asked me to be on, and I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Matt, how awesome was it to have Tebe on the show? I mean, a guy up here in Canada, I mean, a little bit of inside baseball. I'm low-key a big country music fan. And it might seem strange. You can make fun of me. I really do not care. Some of my best memories are from going to country concerts. Just drinking lots of beers and going to country concerts. But really, Matt, it was awesome to have Tebe on. And hopefully for everybody out there, 2021 can really return to a little bit of normalcy. And I know for Tebe too, hopefully he can get back out there and start touring once again. But overall, great to have him on. And I mean, really, that's at the heart of This Week in MMA. It's a show for the fans. It's a show that we enjoy doing. Hopefully you enjoy watching it as well. You can always find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fight Night Picks. You can find me at Craig Allen FNP. You can find Matt at Matt Allen FNP. But this show, like it used to be, it's not going anywhere. And we're really looking forward to bringing out more episodes of the show.
Oh, 100%. Stuff like this. Again, we like talking about MMA. It is our favorite thing to do. There's a reason we make this content for you guys. So happy you guys have been enjoying it too. Hopefully you enjoy the relaunch of the show. And yeah, the guests, phenomenal. The show, hopefully y'all enjoyed. And yeah, hopefully we can just keep this train moving on into 2021.
And the fans are the best fans in MMA. Oh, yeah. And I mean, from the start of the year, we started 1,000 subscribers, just kind of scratching the surface, and it took 2 years to get to that point. And from there to now, it's absolutely insane. It's all thanks to you out there. We're just about to eclipse 18,000 subscribers. The goal is to get to 20,000 before the end of the year. So A, if you made it this far, you're probably already subscribed. B, if you're just kind of dipping your toe in the water, maybe think about it. But we really do appreciate everybody. Looking forward to next week's This Week in MMA. And Matt, keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it.